Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We begin, as usual, on Fridays with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment, My Questions and Yours, for Mayor Bill de Blasio at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or you can tweet a question, just use the hashtag #AskTheMayor. I understand the mayor is in Puerto Rico this morning, so Mr. Mayor, hello from New York.
Good morning, Brian. How you doing?
Good. You want to tell us about your mission down there?
Absolutely. So every year there is a gathering of Latino leaders from New York, and it's an opportunity to spend a lot of time with the Latino leadership, but also a lot of the other key leaders from the city, and really focus on a bunch of issues that we often don't get time to focus on in the rush of things. That's very productive. But we also announced yesterday a major new initiative for minority and women-owned business, and this is going to literally add $5 billion over the course of the next few years to our efforts to provide opportunity for minority and women-owned businesses in contracting with the city. And this is, you know, really taking the whole notion of economic fairness and equality and opportunity to a whole new level. We announced that yesterday with a number of Latino and Latina business leaders and Puerto Rican business leaders who have been waiting to see the city of New York, you know, really engage the notion of investment, because bluntly, for decades and decades, the city of New York paid lip service to economic fairness and to MWBEs, minority and women-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. But this is now, you know, $25 billion plan. Overall, $5 billion more has been added. And it's going to mean, I mean, let's be blunt. For a long time, government contracting was the province of companies particularly owned by white men, and there was not the kind of sharing of the wealth and sharing of opportunity, and a lot of the money went outside the five boroughs when those contracts were given. Now we are moving increasingly to contracts from the city going to New York City-based companies owned by women and people of color, who then employ people from their own communities, keep the money in the communities, kind of create a virtuous circle. A lot of enthusiasm for this announcement down here.
Did you learn anything while you were there, or while you are there, about how things are this long now after the hurricane and popular disgust with both President Trump and Governor Rossello?
Absolutely, Brian. And during my presidential campaign, I was down here a few months ago talking to a variety of leaders, and now again on this trip, I'm going later today to an area of San Juan called Caño Martin Peña, and it is an area that's been devastated by the hurricane, a lower-income community that was struggling to begin with. The hurricane made things a lot worse. No coherent help has come in from the federal government. Obviously, the Commonwealth government here in Puerto Rico has been struggling for a variety of reasons. I'm going back to that community today to talk about the ways we can help. New York City can help them directly with their plan. The people of that community have a plan to revitalize their own community. They're not waiting on their local government, and they're not waiting on the federal government. We're going to help them. New York City is going to help them directly, and we're going to up the fight in Washington for what federal agencies can do for Puerto Rico. It's breathtaking and painful to see how little help got here, and it's all about race and, bluntly, a version of colonialism that this part of the United States of America got ignored and continues to be ignored. So we're going to, today I'm going to work on shining a light on one of the places in Puerto Rico that needs help the most.
Very good. Let me bring you back to Lower Manhattan, Police Plaza, really the whole city. But you have a new police commissioner, obviously, and the sad, I think, for you and for many people, departure of the current one, James O'Neill. And after media coverage of this all week, I'll cut right to the chase. Did Commissioner O'Neill kind of fall on his sword because he lost too much of the rank and file from firing Officer Daniel Pantaleo and the death of Eric Garner?
I'm glad you asked the question, Brian, because I think the answer is a resounding no. And I'll speak about our new commissioner, Dermot Shea, in a moment, who is down here in Puerto Rico meeting with community leaders, you know, immediately and building that bond from the beginning. And the reason I say that is because Jimmy O'Neill was outstanding as a police commissioner on many, many levels, including being the architect of neighborhood policing and building extremely strong relationships across the communities of this city, while being a leader that the officers could really believe in, you know, 35 years plus in the NYPD, up from the rank and file himself, as is Dermot Shea. I've talked to a lot of officers and a lot of people who watch the world of the NYPD closely, and there's been a tremendous appreciation from the beginning that Jimmy O'Neill came from the rank and file and understands the day-to-day lives of officers. No, in fact, you know, I never mistake a few loud voices, a few police union leaders, and a few people from the right wing versus the vast majority of officers who are proud of the job they're doing. Look, they've continued to drive down crime. They're building a better relationship with communities. That actually is very gratifying for individual officers. When you talk to officers about their lives, what they'd like more of is the chance to take their profession and apply it with the tools they've been given through training. And that's what has been a sea change difference with Bratton and O'Neill, and will continue with Dermot Shea, versus what happened previously under Bloomberg and Kelly. Officers are being respected, empowered to do their job the right way, given the training they need. They appreciate that, but they also appreciate getting gratitude from communities because they're building personal and human relationships with community members through neighborhood policing. So, no, actually, we've studied this. We've done internal research to understand where officers, what they're feeling. And, Brian, many, many officers, clear majorities, come back saying they think the work is getting more positive. They think they're having an impact. They feel like they're being thanked and respected. Look, the right wing in this town continues to try and dredge up the notion that the people of this city are being negative towards police. There's always a few who are.
Let me jump in and follow up on that, because when you say the right wing, one might think the New York Post editorial board or something like that, but it's the Sergeants Union president, Ed Mullins, who said O'Neill was the worst commissioner ever. And obviously you disagree with him on that, but where do you think it comes from?
I think he is a tried and true Trump supporter. He is as right wing as it gets. We have to be honest. It's been a reality for decades and decades in this city that there's a right-wing element in the police unions, there's a right-wing element in politics, in media, and they all have combined on these issues to paint the exact same picture. I mean, I could go back literally 50 years to when all these same forces were trying to stop the creation of the Civilian Complaint Review Board in the 1960s, which they succeeded in doing for decades, by the way. This is not new in New York City. What's shocking to me is it's 2019, and there's still too much legitimacy given to philosophy that's been proven wrong. You remember when I ran for mayor, I said, let's get rid of stop and frisk. A whole cacophony of voices said there'd be more crime and there'd be chaos. That hasn't happened. Now, look at Donald Trump today continuing to say, oh, this city is in decline and crime is going up. It's a bald-faced lie. But, you know, it's a beautiful follow-through if you look at it. Donald Trump, trained by Roy Cohn, in the exact same kind of right-wing alarmist mode he's been in since he called for the execution of the Central Park Five, he's saying the exact same kind of concept today. And certain voices in New York City align to it, but not the people. The vast majority of New Yorkers can see with their own eyes that the city has gotten safer, and they appreciate the NYPD, and vice versa. The NYPD knows, members know they're getting the job done, and that they're increasingly appreciated because they're getting the job done. And it's literally a reality that if you looked at some of the mainstream discourse, it's another city than the one we're actually living in.
Just one other thing about police morale, which you were referring to there, that of course has been the tragic, relatively large number compared to the past of police officer suicides this year. There's also been the dumping of water on police officers and things like that. Do you think morale is that good?
I do, and I'm not saying morale is perfect by any stretch. I know there's always more we have to do. But I want you to understand when officers are allowed to actually build relationships in communities. Remember, they used to be running from job to job in a squad car and not getting to develop a human connection to communities. Neighborhood policing has changed that. Think about your work. Think about anyone's work. If you get to be connected to a community, if you get to be connected to people who appreciate you, who, you know, communicate with you, it's so much more gratifying. The training is so much better, including de-escalation, things that help officers to do their job and avoid conflict. Crime continues to go down, so who wouldn't want to be on a winning team? NYPD has clearly been a winning team, and the number of people who want to join the NYPD is extraordinary now. Huge numbers of people applying every year. No, morale is strong. It needs to be stronger, unquestionably, but it is strong, and it should not be stereotyped. The suicides are a horrible tragedy. And we all in this society have to do a lot more to address mental illness. And one of the important things in these last few weeks is the establishment of this program with New York Presbyterian to provide absolutely independent, free psychological services, counseling, mental health services, whatever our police officers need, they can get it. And actually, in just the last couple of weeks, a very substantial number of officers are turning to that new service confidentially to get help. We've got to do more, for sure, but I don't think we should conflate these issues. There have been individuals who have been disrespectful to police officers. That's not acceptable. By the way, that's not new. And just ask veteran officers. That's been going on for decades. It doesn't make it good. We're going to keep fighting it. But we're going to fight that with neighborhood policing. We're going to fight that with building a tighter bond between police and community so those few negative voices get fewer and fewer. And this is about a fundamentally different approach to policing, which is only a few years old, but it's working. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, but I guarantee you, Brian, as neighborhood policing deepens, you're going to find fewer and fewer of these contrarian voices being negative to police. And we just opened in East New York this week. Beautiful thing. Never happened before. NYPD, East New York, Brooklyn opened their own youth center. It's absolutely outstanding facility. The NYPD is saying to young people, come in, all sorts of recreation, culture, come in, get the things you need. We want to listen to you. So think about that. The NYPD is saying to young people, come in so we can have a real conversation. That is a sea change.
We have a call coming in about the transition from Commissioner O'Neill to Commissioner Shea. So let me take Vladimir in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Vladimir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I have a quick question. I'll try to get it out. I wanted the mayor to please, if he can, explain what was the qualification of Mr. O'Shea over Benjamin Tucker that made him more qualified, even though he wasn't second in command, to be the next commissioner.
And just for background for our listeners, Dermot Shea, the number three, I guess, considered police official as chief detectives, was elevated to commissioner over the number two, Benjamin Tucker. And questions have been raised along racial lines as why you skipped over the number two, who's African-American, to go for your third in a row Irish-American commissioner.
So, first of all, thank you, Vladimir, for the question. And, Brian, I need to give this a really clear answer, so give me a moment. First of all, I think we all would agree what we're looking for in every job is the person that we believe, and anyone would believe, but I'm the decision maker here, believes can best bring all the pieces together to protect the people in New York City and to move forward reform and to move forward neighborhood policing. I don't care what someone's background is. I want the person who's going to protect people the best and change this department and move it into the future the best. And I know from 6 years of working with him that that's Dermot Shea. I don't care about his background in that instance. I also think there's a fact problem here. Two wonderful senior members of our team, Ben Tucker, first deputy commissioner on the civilian side, Terry Monahan, chief of department on the uniform side, happens to be Irish-American as well. They're both outstanding leaders. I want both of them continuing to do the work. In fact, your chart is a little off there, Brian, because those are the two highest-ranking people after the commissioner. And I thought both of them were doing great work, but I wanted them in the current role. I thought Dermot Shea was the right person to lead the department into the future. So, bluntly, equal opportunity. There were people who I decided made sense in different roles, regardless of race. But the other thing is to put this into context. This administration, and I think it's not being recognized in this discussion, we have committed ourselves to the greatest diversity of any administration ever. If you look at our deputy mayors, if you look at our budget director as an African-American woman, our housing commissioner as an African-American woman, our corp counsel as an African-American man, our commissioner, excuse me, our health commissioner is a Puerto Rican woman, our schools chancellor is a Mexican-American man. We have tremendous diversity in the administration and in the NYPD. If you look at the top positions, and more if you look at the precinct commanders, it's just think about it, and I think this gets lost in the discussion. When you talk about Ben Tucker, but also talk about the chief of housing is an African-American man, the chief of transit is an Asian man, the chief of, chief of transportation is an Asian man, chief of transit is a Puerto Rican man. I mean, come on, the chief of crime control strategies is a Caucasian woman. Mm-hmm. We have tremendous diversity in leadership in this government and in the NYPD. We are going to move a lot more. And this is something I guarantee all New Yorkers in the next couple of years. This extraordinary generation of talent that's coming up in NYPD that's the most diverse ever, you will start to see in a variety of new positions. And that's going to frame the future of the NYPD. But I don't think we should forget that if in a single decision, the person who makes the most sense happens to come from a certain background, that's just not the way to look at it. What is the way to look at it is who's going to move the agenda most effectively that we're all working on here.
Before we leave the NYPD, across the country, as you know, progressive DAs are releasing previously secret records on officer dishonesty. And locally, WNYC reporter George Joseph has recently obtained some of these records, dishonesty findings, according to judges, from the Bronx and Brooklyn DA's offices. As a progressive leader in this city, would you call on newly elected DAs like Melinda Katz in Queens to release these records? Thus far, she has opposed their release, as I understand it.
Look, I want to understand what's happening here because it troubles me, meaning forget the question of release for a moment, the underlying question. If our DAs, who need to be close partners with the NYPD, if they feel that there are officers who are not giving appropriate testimony, that's a big problem. That's something we have to take very seriously, and I know the NYPD is right now trying to work with those DAs to understand what they've experienced and to see how we can fix it. That's an unacceptable situation. In terms of the release information, look, I always want transparency, but I am most concerned here to fix the problem. So I want to know what's going to allow us to fix the problem best and to make sure that there's not some disconnect here, because I want to make sure that the information that is being provided is accurate. And if officers are being, if the suggestion is the officers were not giving appropriate testimony, I want to make sure that is the truth and there's not anything that is a misportrayal there. So bottom line, I take this very seriously. I know the NYPD does as well, and we're going to get to the bottom of what's going on here because we've got to fix the underlying problem.
Our reporter, George Joseph, had data that showed between 2016 and 2019, the Civilian Complaint Review Board sent 61 findings of false official statement citations against officers to the NYPD. Of these, the complaint board knows of just five where the department concluded that the false statement did occur, 5 out of 61. And the context I want to ask you about that in is that one of the ballot measures that just passed on Election Day this week allows the CCRB itself to investigate officers suspected of lying to their inquiries. In the past, they could only pass them on to NYPD brass and their suspicion that, you know, many of them got deep-sixed. So do you think this referendum that just passed in the city on Tuesday will lead to fewer false statements by police under oath?
Look, I think, again, the Charter Revision Commission did good work, and I had appointees on that commission. It was put together by the City Council, but I think they did good work. I think they put together a strong package of specific changes. But I do want to say, first of all, there's something much bigger here than the question of checks and balances, that we have to continue to improve and reform the department at its core. This is, again, not just about, I have tremendous respect for the CCRB, and again, I'm decades when we should have had one. It was stopped by right-wing forces in this city. Thank God we have it, and we've reinvigorated it in the last 6 years. It was much weaker under the previous administrations. So I think it has a crucial role to play, and that is a valuable check and balance. But I want to get to the essence of things. No officer should ever be providing a false statement, and that has to be first and foremost addressed within the NYPD, which is, again, why we are continuing a reform effort to make this a better agency. And the people who I have put in positions of authority in NYPD all believe in that. These are, you know, lifelong cops who wanted to see the NYPD move forward and wanted to see reform and wanted to see the highest levels of integrity. And they've all comported themselves that way. And that's the change we're making within. I think there is an outdated portrayal here. It's, you know, this is not the time of Serpico or anything. This is a whole different entity than it's been. And I have watched, even just in 6 years, you know, really big internal cultural changes. And when I say culture, I mean every organization has its own sort of standards, its own expectations. The bar is being raised all the time inside the NYPD in terms of integrity and consistency and relationship with the community. So, yeah, I take this seriously. There should never be a false statement by a cop, but that has to be addressed first and foremost within the leadership and the supervisory reality of the NYPD.
Annie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Annie.
Thanks. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm talking on a cell phone. And thank you so much for taking my call. It's an honor to be speaking to both of you. I listen every week, almost.
Thank you.
My question,
and you sound fine. Your phone is fine. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I moved here from the Midwest, so obviously the traffic and congestion is something that concerns me. So right when I moved here, I helped the other mothers on our block to fill out the speed bump petitions, and we waited and waited and waited, and it's been about 4 years, and we actually have had two rather severe accidents right on our block. A little girl was taken to the hospital because someone sped through an intersection, and then over the summer, actually someone sped down the block and crashed right into a retaining wall and obviously passed away, unfortunately. So I want to see if the mayor could help me get connected. We have a lot of children on the block, a lot of pets, and was just hoping I could get connected with someone to ask about those speed bumps.
Absolutely. Annie, first of all, please give your information to WNYC, and my team will follow up with you today. But Annie, which block is it, please?
Oh, I don't want to give the exact block. I will tell you that I'm on the border of East Flatbush and Crown Heights.
Okay. I'm a believer in speed bumps. There are some places where they don't work because, you know, it's a place that is on a bus route or something like that. There are some specific technical matters. But by and large, on most residential streets, they do work. And when there's real support on the block for a speed bump, it's something I think we should do. So let's have folks talk to you today and see if we can get that expedited.
All right, Annie, we will take your information off the air. Hang on there. I want to ask you about empty storefronts and commercial rents. Gothamist reports that Councilman Stephen Levin will introduce a commercial rent regulation bill next week following a report from Comptroller Scott Stringer that the amount of vacant retail space roughly doubled over the last decade. I know it's a legally tricky area. We've talked about this before. But are there certain commercial rent control measures that you would support and others that you know you would not, as this new bill apparently is about to get into the public debate?
Yeah, I can only speak broadly because I'd have to see the specifics exactly because of what you said. There is a big legal challenge here. And I understand the impulse for commercial rent control, and I'm sympathetic. I just, from what I've seen over the years, it's just legally not doable under the current reality. Maybe there's a way to change that. Maybe there's a way to do a modified version. I'd need to see something different than what I've seen previously to believe it is achievable. But I think the bigger question here that you're raising is these empty storefronts. And look, we all have to be honest that some of that is the change in consumer culture, folks shopping online. folks not going to their neighborhood stores as much. I always say, I've said this at a huge number of town hall meetings around the city, if you love your neighborhood stores, please shop there. You know, make that the preference over shopping online or going to big box stores. If you really value the local store, they need you to spend money there. But in terms of the bigger structural reality, another interesting question before us is whether there should be a vacancy tax, whether there should be some kind of initiative, and we're talking with leaders in Albany about this, that says if a landlord leaves a property vacant for too long, that they should have to pay more on that, so we are disincentivizing keeping those storefronts vacant. It's not good for a neighborhood when they're vacant. And, you know, pushing landlords to get their rents down so they can actually find people who want it. But it is a complex issue, Brian, because the underlying reality is the economy has changed in a way that's just changing retail. It's just not the reality of even a few years ago. So we're going to have to navigate that.
Barbara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Barbara.
Hello to the both of you. I've been trying to reach you for 2 years. I'm going to get quickly to the point because I have several topics, and I consider...
Pick your best one, Barbara, really.
Brian. There's two. Police department. I've had nothing but extremely bad experience. Someone shot through my window. The police refused to let me file a police report. I found out approximately a year later after an similar incident happened somewhere in Sheepshead Bay, that they had not told me the truth. I filed Freedom of Information Act. They did everything in their power to deter me and to wear me down. After 4.5 years, that's precisely what they did. They told me that they lost my report. I had to refile over again. I said to them, well, why don't we do both? I refiled and you look for it. 10 days later, they send me the same redacted report.
And Barbara, just to cut to the chase, and because we only have a few minutes left in the segment, what is it that you would like the mayor to do right now? How can the city help you?
Well, can I say something real quick? Recently, somebody tried to burn down my apartment. I went back to the precinct. They refused to let me file a report. I need help. I feel like I'm on needles and pins. I can't sleep. I don't feel comfortable in my home anymore. I need some help in trying to find another place to move.
Okay, Barbara, let me see what we can do. Please give your information to WNYC. We need to understand what happened here, because obviously it's very troubling to me if you are trying to file a police report and your experience was it was not accepted. And if you're trying to find a different place to live, you know, that's a separate thing, but we can have folks talk to you about that as well. So my team will follow up, but I want to take seriously that if you feel NYPD did not treat your situation properly, I want a senior person to follow up with NYPD to find out what happened, because I don't want any New Yorker to have that experience where they feel they were unheard. So you'll get a call today, and we'll make sure we work on that with you.
Barbara, hold on. We'll take that information. We're almost out of time. I want you to be able to talk about the new outreach program that I know you've just announced pertaining to lead in apartments around the city, so that a lot of people who might have little kids in their apartments or have been already through some troubling testing of the lead levels in their kids' blood know that there's a new outreach program and what's available to them. Would you like to describe that?
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for that, Brian. Look, most important thing to say, and I'm saying this as a parent, is that, you know, I don't want any parent in the city worrying about their child's health and whether, you know, lead is playing a negative role. So we have a really clear vision here. That's literally to eradicate lead poisoning in New York City. We're at the point now, thank God, that lead paint poisoning is down 90% since 2005. So we're at the point now where we're on the verge of eradicating it. If anyone says, oh, that's impossible, that sounds crazy, I mean, I remind people of historical realities with disease like polio that literally was eradicated in this country. We can physically eradicate the challenge of lead in this city because, thank God, it is in fewer and fewer places. as we do more and more work to remediate and address it. So the outreach program is going into buildings, and again, these are private buildings, I want to emphasize. A lot of the focus has been on public housing, but actually is very little of the problem related to lead is in public housing. Vast majority is...
Whoops, did we just lose the mayor's line? We did. We did. Well, we were running out of time anyway, but you hear where he's going with that. So there is this new lead outreach program that the city has just announced. And, well, with the mayor in Puerto Rico, you never know what might happen. You never know what might happen if the mayor was at Gracie Mansion with phone lines, but the line popped off. So we're going to end the Ask the Mayor segment right there as we thank Mayor de Blasio for his time today and for giving us the usual time while he's in Puerto Rico on the mission that he described at the beginning of the segment. And thanks, listeners, to all your calls.